pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, week three. Have made it to week three. It's a big day here. I think I'm here to stay. Just always cautious, but I'm feeling good about my long-term prospects right now. Big show played for you today here at the bottom of the hour. April Marie Fogle and I are from Alabama today are going to talk about the possibility of an Ainsworth versus Ivey gubernatorial election, or at least a Republican primary in 2022, and some other things going on with Alabama politics. Had her coming on then. For whatever reason, I guess it's pity, from WVNN, my former boss, Dale Jackson, will be with us. That's in the 10 o'clock hour. And the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to get a Baldwin County theme here. The Republican Party chairman from Baldwin County is joining us, Michael Hoyt. We're going to talk about they just opened their new headquarters. But something that's always intrigued me, Baldwin County's changing a lot. And a lot of new people are coming in. Always been a Republican stronghold. But could this new influx of residents, people, might that change the politics of Baldwin County? Is that something we need to think about? We're going to talk about that and the upcoming election on November 3rd. And then finally, our usual Monday guest joining us in studio, State Representative Matt Simpson. He'll be with us. We'll talk about the college football season, some other things, unemployment benefits, and the president's executive order, things of that nature. So make sure you stay tuned for the entire program. You don't want to miss out on any of it. Are you ready, folks? Today is the launch of the Democratic National Virtual Convention. I think it's like the DNVC or something. It sounds like a bureaucracy. But here's what the two Alabama connection for you. Mayor Randall Woodfin and Senator Doug Jones speak tonight or today at the DNC. What I want you to watch, just if you actually watch this thing, watch it, how different all these speakers are and what they how they come at it. Also, keep an eye on this. The ones that we think of as the far left progressive, the Bernie Sanders and AOC, watch how short their speeches are, right? And compare them to the more mainstream speakers. So keep that in mind. I think this is a learning moment about the Democratic Party. I've been saying this for a while, but the way you want to watch this, the way you want to keep an eye on this, is it's just how much variance there is with the different aspects of the different speakers. Like, or you know, you'll have somebody come on to talk about abortion and Planned Parenthood, or maybe you have somebody come on to talk about carbon emissions and global warming. Maybe you have somebody come talk about universal health care. You have all these sort of special interests. And every one of these components of the Democratic Party in 2020, very passionate, very emotional about their issues, almost to the point that they are willing to go out in the streets of America and go knock over a Starbucks or something. Very, very emotional, right, about their issue. Some of that's Donald Trump. They just don't like Donald Trump. But if you can't be that emotional about every issue. At some point, they're going to turn on each other. I am telling you, this is coming. If worst-case scenario happens, worst-case scenario November 3rd happens, if it is a Democrat House, Democrat Senate, Joe Biden president, they are going to turn on one another. You cannot be everything to everybody. Republicans had to learn this lesson. But what you can watch for tonight at the DNC, obviously they're going to give their anti-Trump talking points. That's kind of the glue right now that holds the Democratic Party together. Post-Trump, everybody's going to want their issue passed, some kind of legislation, some kind of executive order, and they're going to turn on one another. That's the way I see this play out, and you can learn a lot from the convention by seeing that all these different speakers and all the different issues. Well, that's the power of the Democratic Party. Yes, it is growing. It has a demographic advantage. It has the media. It has a lot of things going for it. As a political party, it is going very well. Fair enough? But at some point, there's just you get too big. And there's going to be a Democrat civil war. The Republicans went through this in the 2010s with the Tea Party, survived it. But I don't even think that the Republicans are that different, not as different as the modern-day Democratic Party right now. And that's the problem, because we're already kind of seeing this. The media have tamped down on it a little bit. We're always seeing, like, the Andrew Yang and some of these people that aren't getting the opportunity to speak. Very popular forces within the voices within the Democratic Party. They have limited their time. I've always said this. The people that run the Democratic Party right now, interested in one thing. They're interested in power. I mean, but that's politics, right? It's the power. Some of it's goodwill, but most of it is, what do we need to tell people to vote for us? It's winning elections to get that power. What do we need to tell this group of people to get power? And that's what they do. And they do it over and over again, and it works. It works for some people. It works for some parties. The party of big government and using the voice of government and using the authority of government, the pro-government party, those people in that party, they want that power. And they'll do whatever it takes to get it, even if it means some silly thing about the post office or whatever. The Republicans do it too, but Democrats do it shamelessly. Impeachment, Ukraine, whatever, Russia, all of that. It's about winning elections, getting power. But at some point, the Democrats found this to be the problem. You say all this, and you tell people things, and you make promises. Eventually, they're going to want some return, and they don't get that. And then you start seeing it. You're seeing the beginnings of it. You saw it in 2018, the very first shot. Their Fort Sumter was the election, or the primary win by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York in the Bronx, with defeating Joe Crowley. Elliot Ingalls going down. That was another skirmish. You see more and more of these skirmishes, and these far left socialist progressives, whatever you want to name you want to apply to them, they're going to give way. Or the old guard's going to have to give way to them. It's just going to be a fight within the party, and we've got a front row seat to it. And when they all get together at wherever the DNC, I guess it's Milwaukee, but yeah, it's like all over the country. You're gonna see a bunch of the different flavors of the Democratic Party, but they can't all coexist. You can't be one thing to everybody. You could say you have this position on this issue, on this issue, on this issue, but then the next step of that is, which is the biggest priority. You start ranking the priorities one by one by one, and they can't all be number one. And if Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or whoever, if they don't see that, they're gonna have a lot of unhappy people. So that's gonna be a force to be reckoned with. That's the problem for the Democratic Party. Win or lose, this is the inevitable fight coming, and the DNC is a big part of that. So keep an eye on that. I'm not sure how this is going to be presented. I'm very curious to see if they can pull this off. Typically, these conventions are a springboard into the general election. But this virtual thing, you're not going to have the crowd cheering, or it won't be the same. It'll be... it'll be like a giant Zoom call. I don't really know what to expect, but not knowing what to expect and knowing what kind of political momentum you could get from this, that remains to be seen. Let's take a quick phone call. Let's hear from our good buddy David in Mobile. David, how are you?
Morning, Jeff. Glad to see you're on for a third week in a row.
I know. We're making progress, aren't we?
Yeah, this is Sean's devious plan to get you a Nappy Award.
Yeah, because I couldn't get one as a Land Yap contributor. I had to get a radio show and set myself up to get into running in a different category, it seems.
Yeah. I have a question for you, though, talking about the coming civil war in the Democratic Party. Let's say that Joe Biden loses the election to Donald Trump, We got four more years of Donald Trump as president. I think that actually accelerates the civil war within the Democratic Party. And my question for you is, if that happens and the ultra-socialist left wing of the party takes over the leadership of the Democratic Party, do you see the old guard in the Democratic Party teaming up with the old guard of the Republican Party that lost to the Trump wing of the Republican Party to form a viable third party?
I don't know if it'd be a viable third party. It might be a third party. I don't know if it'd be viable or not. That's an interesting take, because then you have like these old Republicans like Nicole Wallace or Bill Kristol, those, you know, these milquetoast never Trumpers, our buddy Quinn Hillier, and you get them. Would they align with? I don't know who might that might be on the Democrat side.
The Joe Manchin type. Democrats. I know they're few and far between.
He's too likable. He would never get in along with that crowd. I don't know. I'd be curious to see who the personalities were. I think so much of this is more personality driven than actual policy. I think Trump, in the disdain for Trump, it's not so much his policies. It's just they don't like his personality. Watch MSNBC for 10 minutes. They may go after him right now for Postal Service or blah, blah, blah. But if you watch it, I say if you watch it for 10 minutes, but if you watch it over a long period of time, you see it's just they don't like his tweeting. They don't like what he says about people. It's so superficial. It's not really steeped in much.
Yeah, that's the same problem I have with Trump, except I don't go to the extreme of becoming a never Trumper. I just like it. Just his personality just rubs me the wrong way. But, the, you know, that's okay because, you know, like my granddad always used to say, if everybody liked the same thing, everybody'd like your grandmother.
Hey, David, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. No, you stumbled onto something there. Like, what would happen if the Democrats splinter? Because it would, I think, for that to happen, though. Well, if we go ahead forward with your premise, if the Democrats lose, that's just a natural reaction. I think Democrats could be looking at who's in charge and say, how do we lose to this guy? He's the worst president ever. He's worse than James Buchanan or whoever. He's terrible. How do we lose to this guy twice? Heads must roll, and then maybe somehow Pelosi survives. She always seems to survive these. It's amazing, but she survives. But will donors, all of these people like McConnell and Pelosi and Schumer, McCarthy, they're in the leadership in Congress because they are able to fundraise. They have the apparatus, the infrastructure. They know the ins and outs. They're able to protect some members. They're able to fundraise for upstarts. They got their guys in power in a lot of places. And if Pelosi or Schumer lose, the people are going to say, well, why do we keep writing you checks? We give you money because we want you to be in charge. We want Democrats in charge. And then I think perhaps you do see a shakeup. I don't know who that might be. Everyone likes to say Adam Schiff could be the next speaker. Pelosi stepped aside. But Schiff is a Pelosi lieutenant. He's of that Pelosi wing. That is why he is where he is. I'll tell you something, guys. In the House, on the Democrat side, chairmanships are done by seniority. Not as much of fundraising like they are on the Republican side, but the Speaker gets to pick the committee heads of two committees, House Intelligence, House Rules Committee. Her lieutenant there in that committee, in that spot, is Adam Schiff. Would the Democratic Party look to the Pelosi wing of the House? Or maybe we are thinking about the possibility of an AOC or something like that. Keep an eye on that. DNC starting today. We're going to take a time out. We will return. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
I learned the path to heaven is full of sinners and believers. Learned that happiness on earth ain't just for high achievers. I've come to know.
I gave you my heart and I tried to make you happy.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Monday morning to you. Still to come in the next segment, we'll hear from Alabama Today's April Marie Fogle. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. Yes, I am. I'm still on the airways. Very happy to be with you. Text us, call us, 251-343-0106. Some polling data came out. CNN, a couple of polls. One of those, CNN, Trump has narrowed the gap, apparently, to a, it looks like about a 7-point margin. This was anticipated. This is a CNN poll. Take it for what you want. Now the Washington Post this morning with ABC Washington Post poll, a little bit of a difference, 12 points. So 12 points right in there. Did nobody, that's for a poll of what it is just registered voters. That's not really in line. These things will get closer. They'll get a better idea as things move along, particularly with now that we know what each ticket is, Biden, Harris, Trump, Pence. But here's what you got to watch. They keep putting out these polls of registered voters, guys. And like I tell you, national polls, the only thing they're good for is to watch the trend. We're seeing a trend. We are seeing a clear trend that this race is getting closer. All these other polls that we saw earlier in the summer, they're narrowing. They're starting to really close on, and the gap is shrinking. That's what you could take away. But two things. Well, first of all, we don't elect a president based on the popular vote. But the second thing about this is, though, it's with registered voters, you're not getting a true picture of – you're not getting a real true sense of what the election is going to be, because there's registered voters and then these polls of likely voters. When you put a poll of likely voters out there, I think that gap narrows even more. You start to see – you really start to see that close. And then there's all these other factors that we don't talk about, but they are part of this that – you know, the people that don't answer polls, there's a few Democrats out there, no doubt about it. But a lot of them are, there's probably a lot more Republicans, a lot more Trump supporters. Since it is taboo to be a Donald Trump supporter in some places in this country, they're going to be reluctant to respond to these surveys. I think that, you know, that may be good for 1, 2, 3 points. This is becoming a ball game. And now I still think if Biden, I still think the election's held today, Biden probably wins. But reading through both of these polls, they acknowledge in swing states where you know, it's going to be 7 or 8 states that decide this election. It's a lot closer. Yeah, there's population in Illinois, California, and New York, the 3 biggest cities in the country, and they always go Democrat. And, you know, but that Electoral College, that's already baked into the pie, right? They already know those are probably going to go Democrat. And the people who respond to these polls, there's a higher likelihood they're going to be from a bigger city, a metropolitan area, major place, and not from another state, a smaller state, a swing state, if you will. So that's the polling, though. If you're a Donald Trump supporter, you ought to be feeling a little bit better about the prospects for November 3rd. Because here it is, the eve of the conventions, and things are starting to tighten. Still got to make it through September and October, particularly October. You'll see a lot of things happen in October. You always do. But this is a very different election. But I think the civil unrest dies down a little bit. Summers are always known for that, particularly in election years. Maybe that becomes a factor. Does that help Democrats or does that help Republicans? And we start really focusing on whatever each candidate says. And also Biden. Joe Biden, we know because he's Joe Biden, he's been around since the 70s. But Joe Biden of 2020, we don't know. And there's a lot to learn about that, especially with Democrat politics right now and this push by the progressive left. How far is he willing to go to win that crowd over? Can anybody give me an answer to that? Because his vice presidential pick certainly isn't a shout out to that. His vice presidential pick isn't a shout out to that at all. It's Kamala Harris could be whatever she wants to be at any given time. She has no, I mean, she's left of center, but we're at left of center. It's all over the map. So she could be far left progressive, or she could be the sensible moderate, whatever it takes, which maybe that's part of the strategy, right? That she could go speak to a crowd of the Netroots Nation Daily Coast types, or she could go speak to the Problem Solvers Caucus on Capitol Hill. And you have that nice mix there that you could get to whatever you need to be given the politics. So it's very interesting, but these polls are tightening. So it tells me if this trend continues, it's going to be a much more of an election than the least the media have anticipated. All right, got to take a timeout. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5. Why can't you see what you do?
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. So come on the program today in the next hour. We're going to hear, we get grace with the presence of Dale Jackson from WVNN. Still bitter about my departure from Huntsville, apparently. Sean scored a real coup there against Dale Jackson. Also on the program later today, we've got Baldwin County Republican Party Chairman Michael Hoyt and State Representative Matt Simpson will join us in studio. That's in the 11 a.m. hour. Make sure you stay tuned. That'll be a fascinating program for you. But joining us now, always a pleasure to introduce my next guest. She is the proprietor of Alabama Today, a very good website for Alabama politics. April Marie Fogle joins us. April, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you today?
Doing well. Just give us a real quick update. Are you making it through this the pandemic up there?
Okay, are you ready for what just happened? I just got home from dropping my three kids off at school for the first day of the school year.
How do you feel about that?
Okay, so the second grader, I kind of expected her to play it cool. So we get there, she lets me take a single photo, and she's off to find her friends. Now, the only reason I'm allowed in is because I have a baby. So I got to drop the 2-year-old off at his class. But I'm allowed to walk the 4-year-old just in case he needs help. As I'm dropping off the baby, he turns 4 actually next Friday, the 3-year-old just jets. So I have this great photo on my Facebook of him just ready to go. I think they're just starved for physical interaction. They want to see their friends. So I'm happy that they get to do that, even if it's just for a little bit.
You feel okay about the situation there and the spread or anything like that?
If anything, I feel like people really need to realize that for the littles, the minor littles, I've got a 2-year-old, 3-year-old about to turn 4, and a 7-year-old. For the littles, it's safe. The benefits of them being at school far outweigh the risk of COVID. So I'm feeling really good about them going back. I'm glad their school is allowing them to.
I kind of think there's a lot of parents out there that would echo those sentiments about just the kids getting back. Because we look back, the years are younger, obviously, but we look back and in general, the school ended early in the spring. It's been a long, long summer for a lot of children.
So it really has been. So we were early adapters of the lockdown because I have pretty bad asthma. I have severe coughing that lasts during flu season forever. It feels like I'm always coughing. So I wasn't sure what my body would particularly do and how at risk I was. So we locked down March 13th. And we have, as I've had some subsequent testing, and they said, yeah, you're not as high risk as I would, as initial reports said people with asthma were. I've been a little bit more having a little more leeway with them, but I feel good about them going to school.
Well, that's hopefully it continues to go well for you. Let's move on to other things. So a little bit of action here, looking to 2022. I know we still got to get through November 3rd before we start really thinking about that election cycle. But the gubernatorial election,
we can go ahead and call it for Tuberville. I'm feeling confident.
Well, what about the I think the presidential election, though, I think that's going to matter. I think Congress and presidential elections are going to matter a whole lot when it comes to Alabama politics and who runs for Senate and or the governor's seat. But let me get you all to talk about this. I wrote a piece for Land Yap last week about the possibility of a KIV versus Will Ainsworth gubernatorial matchup. It's probably a long shot that would actually happen. But just kind of, you know, laying out how it might happen if it did. The gubernatorial race, other than those two names, I'm not really hearing anybody else mentioned, except maybe John Merrill, the Secretary of State.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we got another surprise wild card. I feel like there have been wild cards this year, right? Of course, Tuberville, Coleman down for the congressional race. So I wouldn't be surprised if we found ourselves with either a congressional member. I mentioned maybe Gary Palmer, who term limited himself and has to have somewhere to go from there. People who aren't quite sure they want to get in the U.S. Senate race, look into the governor's race, and even if it's just to increase their name ID.
Yeah, well, I guess the big question is will or won't Richard Shelby run for another term? But I think that all hinges on if he could continue to serve out his term as the appropriations chairman. If the Republicans lose Senate, why is he going to stick around? And think about it, we war gaming out this far. Like, if Trump wins, 2022 ought to be a good year for Democrats. If Biden wins, it ought to be a good year for Republicans. All that matters because that determines who's going to be the chairman. The ruling party in Congress on Capitol Hill is going to be divvy out the chairmanships. If the Republicans, if it looks like the Republicans in the Senate can't be in charge, then I can't see him sticking around just to be the ranking member or whatever.
I agree with you. I think that it's going to have a lot to do with if we lose that Senate, and I'm worried. I am genuinely a little worried about that Senate. And we have people like the Lincoln Project who say they're against the Trump, but are also going after Republican senators who supported Trump or didn't impeach him, and that worries me.
The Lincoln Project is like the bright, shiny object. Do they really have any stroke with the electorate?
Well, I think in some of these swing states where it's not the focus of these, so you got to keep in mind that a lot of their videos are just meant to irk Trump and his supporters. But TV ads they're doing in some of these critical races could influence people who are like, yeah, I really wish they hadn't preached Trump, or maybe they should have. Or, you know, even if they just suppress voters, voters go, maybe I won't support the senator. And so that worries me there. But back to the governor's race, I think Will Ainsworth knows better than to go against an Ivy, because I think the fundraising mechanism for him dries up.
I think he could self-fund a lot of this. Here's something else, April. Let's look back at that 2018 lieutenant governor's race between him and Twinkle Cavanaugh. You had a real division there. It wasn't like I turned out. There wasn't a lot of the public wasn't as interested. But it was like the different sides in Montgomery, the farmers and the business community. You had that kind of that dynamic there on one side and on the other. Maybe you have that again if Will Ainsworth were to run against KIV.
Well, and I think that he could, but I just don't know that he wants to position himself as the guy who just picks everybody off. I was a big supporter over him over Twinkle. It was the first endorsement I ever made on Alabama Today, as a matter of fact. I didn't endorse a candidate ever, and then I endorsed him over Twinkle because I just felt like he worked harder and he had the level of energy that we wanted. And he was, you know, Twinkle has the establishment ties that I am never a fan of. But that said, I don't know that he wants to make that his career path. And all of this, I'm not sure Ivy wants to be governor anymore. Do you get the sense that she wants to?
I don't get a sense from her personally. I get the sense maybe from the people around her that they wouldn't mind her being around for another 4 years. The people within that office, Chief of Staff Joe Bonner.
I was going to say, well, why not Bonner run?
He can't win. Well, do you think he can win statewide?
I think he has a statesman quality to him that we are lacking.
I think he can win down in South Alabama, maybe, and obviously Wilcox County or maybe parts of the Black Belt, but I don't know about the rest of the state.
I don't know that he's not well known, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Because I think he's always kind of been eyeballing a potential run for governor, and this goes back a long, long time, ever since he got in Congress, was that 2002? I think he's had his eye on that, but I think he could raise a lot of money. I don't know.
It's hard
to see him winning.
He has been a steady hand to the COVID crisis, and anybody watching behind the scenes knows it's been him who's done that. And he's brought a lot of continuity to the governor's office that wasn't there before. And so I actually feel more confident if someone from the office is going to run. I think the dark horse is on him running, not the governor running again.
Well, I think Ivy's got a much, if you compared the chances of who could win in a 2022 election, and I think Ivy's a much better horse to bet on than Joe Bonner.
Well, here's the problem. Ivy has to overcome the gas tax, the troll support, and the abysmal reaction to her education plan to make that appointment.
But is,
I mean,
it?
She lost that one in an embarrassing. What was it? It was like close to 70%, wasn't it?
But is it? Can't you just tie Ivy to Joe Bonner to everything you could to criticize about Kay Ivy?
It doesn't fall back on staff the same way.
Because
what are people going to say? Ivy was a puppet for Bonner.
They're already saying that. He's kind of the shadow governor behind the scenes, and she's off doing whatever. I mean, that is, you know, you talk to the same people I talk to about who really is calling the shots within the governor's office.
Yeah, but that's us talking, and I say us, your listeners included, right? People who are in the know, who listen to this, who talk about what's going on in the state government. But your run-of-the-mill, ordinary voter who doesn't listen to talk radio, doesn't read Yellowhammer or Alabama Today, those people will blame the governor and not the governor's staff.
Well, if I'm Ainsworth and I'm running against Joe Bonner, I am going to tie those two at the hip, though. And I don't think it's that heavy of a lift.
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting race. And you mentioned John Merrill. I would not rule him out.
It's not really clear what John Merrill's path is, where he would go. Because the Senate race for him, it was a trial balloon, but I don't think it went as well as he had hoped. I don't think he necessarily thought that he was going to be the next U.S. Senator from Alabama, but he had his struggle was that fundraising part of it.
Fundraising and energy. I have said this actually before, that there is a quality that Ainsworth has of being passionate. And I've seen Merrill get that, especially when people are criticizing our election efforts here in Alabama and his protecting the integrity of the vote. But for, by and large, he's kind of just an even-keeled person. And I don't know that he has the passion that voters are attracted to these days. Voters are really attracted to the passionate people.
Well, you know, the thing about Ainsworth that's really interesting to me is that he could be whatever he needs to be. He could be the Chamber of Commerce Republican and go hang out at a BCA conference. Or he could go to the Alabama Kerry Conference wherever and be the Second Amendment guy, or he could go to the Tea Party thing. He's in some ways, I wouldn't say he's a blank slate, but he is able to adapt to whatever the environment is in a Republican primary, I think.
So for the longest time, and I'm starting to warm up to it now, but for the longest time, I said Ainsworth was the future of Alabama politics. For that reason, and just having been around him and understanding that he really does want to do great things for the state, he lost me when he came out against Ivy's mask mandate.
But I think he picked up a lot of support. He may have lost you, but there's a lot of people that vote Republican primaries that were cheering that on.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, I think the people who are cheering that on, it's like preaching to the choir. He already had them. He didn't pick up anybody. I think he got his supporters a big round of applause from the people who were already voting for him and supporting him. And then the people who were desperately worried about the numbers, the alarming numbers for COVID deaths and COVID ICU patients in the state. I think the rest of us were like, we really like you, Will, but you didn't have to go this far to criticize the governor.
What do you make of that? Let's take whatever the issue is out of, but he's come out against her on the toll bridge. He's come out. He's not afraid to speak out against the governor. He is more outspoken, given in this new era where we have, you know, one party rule. He's one of the more outspoken lieutenant governors we've had. Well, I guess he hits him and Ivy, but he is obviously more outspoken than Ivy was when she was lieutenant governor.
Shooting warning shots, right?
I mean, like what?
I'm not afraid.
What is the goal here? What is the objective of Will Ainsworth coming out publicly to criticize Kay Ivey?
I would say name ID, press, and just shoring up the support of his people and kind of identifying who they are. And there was a lot to be picked up and gained by coming out against the education amendment, coming out against the toll, coming out early for shutting down, and then of course he came back for opening up a little sooner than people wanted to. I feel like the fact is he's just getting out there, right? He's showing he's a leader. He wants to be ahead on these issues. And I don't think Ivy did that when she was lieutenant governor. Can you think of an example of Ivy going against the Bentley administration?
I can't think of any time Ivy made news as lieutenant governor.
I can't think of many times she's made news until this COVID stuff as governor.
Well, I think that the toll bridge, well, in a good way, yes, but she's made plenty of news in a bad way. Hey, April, we're out of time here. Real quick, before I let you go.
Great talking to you.
Before I let you go, where can they find you on social media, and where can they find the great website, Alabama Today?
So Alabama Today is just what it sounds like, alabamatoday.com or altoday.com, both work. And then I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Parler, at April Marie, APRYLMARIE. And I want to say, if the race were held today and it was Ivy Ainsworth, I'd vote Ainsworth.
April, as always, thanks for making time for us.
You take care.
As April Marie Fogel, Alabama Today, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend.
Jack Daniel's whiskey at 1.5's is how the folks around here have been living their life.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Fantastic to be with you on this Monday morning, week three of the Mobile incarnation of the Jeff Porch Show. Still on the air. Always thankful for that. So coming up program today from WVNN, Dale Jackson, Baldwin County Republican Party Chairman Michael Hoyt, and State Representative Matt Simpson joins us in studio. So make sure you stay tuned for that. A few things going on in state politics. A story today from our friend Mary Sell at Alabama Daily News about taxing COVID-19 relief. The governor... what would have to happen there? Right now, you're going to pay state income tax on whatever you get, whatever the stimulus payment is. You're going to have to pay state income tax on that. Chris Elliott, our friend out in the Baldwin County there on the Eastern Shore, he has legislation that would do away with that. It kind of like they did with the last stimulus, if you recall, back in I guess it was 2009, and they did another stimulus and people got checks, and they stripped out the state income tax provision of that, and you don't have to pay. I mean, I get it, it's money from the federal government, might as well not tax it, but you gotta do it statutorily. You can't just say it. The problem is, though, there may not be the time to get it done in time. It would require some kind of special session. We could not wait until the general session next spring to do this before tax day. Now, they could retroactively do it, and you would get a rebate or a refund or something like that, I suppose. But there's movement on that. I think there's all of these loose ends that need to be tied up. And the only way you're going to get to do that is if they did some kind of special session. Well, Friday night on Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal, the governor would have to call it, but it sounded to me Speaker Mac McCutcheon was on, and we're trying to get him on the program real soon. It just doesn't sound like there's the will for that. He doesn't want his members back together. Sees COVID-19 is too much of a stumbling block. That there are you know, I know a lot of you say, well, there's people that are working at grocery stores and at schools, and but to be honest, a lot of those members of the House are at risk. He doesn't want to deal with that. I don't know why you don't deal with it. Are they going to be less at risk if this is still going on in March when they come back, when they do reconvene general session late February, whatever the day is? So, I you know, why not? If then, why not now? But that is that's the reluctance to do that. There's a lot of things that need to get done. There's economic development packages that got to be extended. Obviously, prisons. And Governor Ivey kind of going at it on her own without the input from the legislature because they're not in. But there's just no, there appears to be no willingness from the governor to call a special session. So I went and hold my breath. Guys, got to take a timeout. We will return. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Nobody looking back again.